listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 249 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week, sorry for the absence, but stuff happened. Gish happened, aka the Greatest International Scavenger Hunt. And both Paul, myself, and eight other people in Cornwall that were on our team were kind of occupied. And then we had to kind of recover. So for those of you who've listened to us for quite some time, you'll know that for the last... was it 4 years now, I think? Since summer of 2015, so this is our fifth go, but it's been 4 years. So this is our fifth scavenger hunt.
Fifth for you.
Fifth for me, participating over the course of sort of end of July, start of August sort of period. And yeah, so there were 227 hunt items running from, was it July 27th till August, was it 34th, which it was the Saturday to the Saturday, and a list of about 190 odd dropped, and then over the course of the hunt it got added to and it became 227 items. And for Gish, what you basically do is you complete these tasks that are these items, and you either take you make an image or you make a video, and that's your proof for it, and you submit it and you get points. There's like a minimum number of points available per item if you've actually completed the task as worded, or if you've done it to a high enough quality you can get like bonus points. Points mean
prizes
to an extent. Points mean if you're like a really competitive team, because you can either be a competitive team or for a fun team. If you're a really competitive team, you'll be the kind of team that has 15 people on your team. Teams can be 9 to 15 people. And you'll have done over probably 190 of the items on the list. And most of them to a very high quality. Racking up something like over 8,000 points cumulatively as a team. And you have the chance to win a holiday for your entire team. Traditionally, ooh, this holiday has been with the delightful... Lord, something, something, savior of normalcy. No, he's not a savior of normalcy. He doesn't want normalcy. The Lord of anti-normalcy, Misha Collins, aka that dude that plays Cassidy on Supernatural. Anyway, the scavenger hunt's been going on for like quite a while now. I think since maybe like 2013. There's been a hunt each year.
Was it there before you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I find that hard to believe.
But yeah, so it's been going for quite a while. So we had a local... we decided to... because we had so many people locally asking us to join the team we'd been on for the previous few years. And it was like, okay, well, we can't take over this poor international team. So we'll make a local team. So we made a local team. And over the course of the week, our friends and family helped us complete 88 of the final 227 tasks.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. That was intense. We had people still, like, completing tasks in the like run up to the clock, because for us it's a Saturday to Saturday if you're living in Pacific time, but for the rest of the world that's kind of, you know, Greenwich plus it's more like into Sunday,
yeah,
or the early hours of Sunday. And so we had people like still trying to finish stuff at about like 5:30 in the morning UK time on the Sunday. The hunt's meant to finish at like 11 Pacific or something on Saturday. Mm. So, yeah. I had fun trying to ask for a cannon that I could paint on. Didn't manage to get a full-sized cannon in the end, but I did manage to... My dad managed to find at a client's place a pen holder that was shaped like a cannon that had a surface that was big enough for me to put some cute art on. Basically, the task was, this is one of my favourite tasks, it was to paint on a cannon something you want to be supernatural cannon. See where we're going with this?
Yeah.
Cannon on a cannon? I decided that I want Sam owning two dogs to be cannon, and so I painted Sam Winchester and two cute little dogs on the side of a cannon. It was very adorable. In fact, basically because I was the main Supernatural fan on the team,
I don't think anyone had any doubt.
Some people on the team hadn't even watched Supernatural, so like,
who are these people?
They wanted to do crazy fun things, so it doesn't matter. But basically, I took on all the Supernatural tests.
Fair enough, but still.
Yeah. So I did the kind of thing. I made a Padalecki, which was a bust made out of pads in Jared Padalecki's image. I then had to also, though, donate an equal amount, if not more, sanitary products to a local refuge. So we got in contact with the Cornwall Refuge Trust, found out, you know, how do we post to their PA box and stuff. And, you know, was it okay to send pads? Because obviously that's like a bulky item that's going to be a big box. So with Paul's help, got that together, and we sent that off like on the Saturday morning that was like near the end of the hunt. Perhaps one of the there were two really complicated, no, three really complicated tasks in terms of the supernatural and actor stuff. One was you had to do a fumage painting, which is where you use a candle to pretty much put soot on a piece of paper or card. You can try and do the shape of the subject whilst you're doing that, but really you then go back over it and try to like use like a brush or like a putty rubber to like put, sort of negative in like an image, like using outlines or like getting rid of negative space or something. Chose Jared Padalecki for that. I think people might start thinking I got a thing for Jared Padalecki. There was a marshmallow test where you had to paint Jared.
I was politely silent.
Well, did we have to paint Jared? Could it have been anyone on the
you chose Jared
marshmallow one though? I think that might have been it. Could have been anyone, or was it had to be Jared? Maybe it had to be Jared. But anyway, I put something that looked vaguely like Jared Padalecki on the side of giant marshmallow.
Yeah, because it is meant to be like soft and squidgy.
Yeah. So. We had to buy a blowtorch in order to make this happen. The blowtorch is still at one of our friends' houses on account of the fact that we don't have a safe space to store it. That was fun. And perhaps the most fun, not fun thing that I was involved with and dragged two other team members into my personal hell over was a task where you had to bake a pie filled with Skittles that also happened to have Jensen Ackles' face on it, and the Skittles needed to be visible behind the lattice work. Now, one, you don't bake with Skittles. Two, trying to bake a pie without a filling is actually incredibly freaking difficult. And on the third attempt, after two very collapsy failed attempts, or one that didn't quite meet the specifications because the Skittles were meant to be visible behind lattice rather than just a hole where Skittles have been put in. On the third attempt, I carefully rolled out and baked every single section separately. So baked like the pie base and filled it with like rice so that it would stay like as a pie base, properly filling the tin. The next stage was, baked the lattice work separately on a sheet, but I had to put like a freaking like oven dish on top to keep it flat and stop it from shrinking. The first attempt doing that part went wrong because I forgot to put some baking sheet between the oven dish and the pastry, so it stuck. second attempt for that particular piece went right. Then I baked Jensen Ackles' face, a load of beer glasses.
A likeness of Jensen
Ackles' face.
Yes.
A whole bunch of beer glasses filled with beer and like a clipboard because he's been doing some director work. And like a script, and then like basically assembled everything after pouring the Skittles into the bowl initially after the base had cooled down. I used a black treacle for extra detail once everything had been baked. It's like the beer glasses, like I painted like the bottom like sort of three quarters or so with like black treacle to make it look like there was beer inside, and like help pick out details on like Jensen's face and stuff. Three freaking attempts. There was leftover pastry. I baked pumpkin pie this week because we've got Tim Pumpkin in the house.
Have we still got some pastry in there as well?
No, I had to chuck that because it was starting to look a bit funky because it'd been reworked so many times.
That's fair.
But yeah, sorry to my friend whose kitchen bore the brutality of the first pie. Where we'd bought the wrong pastry because we didn't have time to make pastry, basically, because it's tasks and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of, when dealing with Gish, you have to prioritize stuff that, you know, you can definitely do and won't take too long because there are many tasks to be done. So, you know, you could say, for example, there's certain location-based tasks where you could be like, go do something at Stonehenge. Now, for a lot of people in the UK, going to Stonehenge and doing something and then heading back home is going to take up quite a bit of the day.
Yeah, it's not really that practical.
No. So
it's a bit like, you know, do something at the Washington Monument and then... on the same day, go to the observation deck of the Empire State Building and then visit the Alamo. And it's just no. Those things are not going to happen on the same day.
Exactly. So you kind of have to prioritise. And I don't think, well, most teams aren't going to be like, right, well, we're going to try and tackle everything. Instead, they'll be like prioritising stuff that can be done, that looks actually quite fun, that you've actually got the resources or connections to do something, you know. And kind of that's how it went. I mean, we had a couple of people on our team which have kids.
Yeah.
And this year we had quite a few tasks which involved kids doing something.
Yeah.
Whether that be reading to the monster underneath the bed or...
coaching somebody in sports or... But there were a lot of kid-related tasks where it was helpful to... that they were, you know...
Available
to... to be fair, their parents had decided to sort of use this week to the most of their benefit just to do something fun and zany... anyway, for everyone, so...
And they really enjoyed it. And this is the first year where we've actually had access to kids. Makes it sound so bad, but...
Well, you say that. I mean, when we were on the previous team, they sometimes were able to find members of the team who could ask family members very politely if they could borrow their kids.
That's like, you know...
Yeah.
Friends and family who aren't doing it, that you have to kind of work around. And this time it was like, nope. They're just going to do it with their kids. They're not even going to ask.
two of our team members designed and coded a short video game for one task. Sadly, they did have bigger plans. You had to do it in like either like HTML5 or Java or like WebGL, like something that was mobile app friendly. And they had big dreams of doing like an RPG. But with working at the same time as well, they didn't have enough time in the evenings to code something like that, so they made a platformer. But it looked really good, and it actually worked on a mobile device.
I mean, I feel like as a team, we had certain limitations, like the fact that we had only 10 team members as opposed to 15, which is the maximum that you're allowed. We're all in the roughly in the same location, so it's not like we could just go, oh, teammate over there is in America, can you, you know, take a trip to, you know, wherever and do this thing.
Mind you, the trips to, like, when there's a location specific item, it is complicated a lot of the time for a lot of people to go to them anyway, because it's like, I mean, Misha Collins' family and himself, they live in around Seattle, I believe, other than having maybe like something in Vancouver as well for filming. But so like there's stuff that happens in Seattle or near Seattle, like sort of like in so there's stuff like that, or it might be something that's like quite, it might be a particular park in some part of the States. Or I remember one year there was like a task which involved Sydney in Australia.
Yeah.
And watermelons. Don't ask what specifically. It was pretty
zany. Yeah, that was a couple of years ago, so.
Yeah. But yeah.
I think we did rather well considering.
I mean, we weren't a competitive team, and I was kind of, I think next time, because I was captain, I think next time I'm going to push for the, if you're not having fun doing the thing, move on to a different item kind of deal.
I mean, we were trying to make sure that everybody was happy doing stuff as well, you know, because obviously there will be teams out there that are like, you know, oh, you will be doing this, you will be doing that. And, you know, because on Facebook you can kind of go onto the kind of Gish group, as it were, and you do get like lots of people that will turn around and say, oh, you know, that there have been like team members that have kind of literally not done anything, or, you know, have just been out of contact, so they can't even do like group projects type thing. And it is kind of sad when that happens.
It's supposed to be fun.
Exactly.
Yeah. It got pretty there's a lot of outside of the team, there's a lot of, I want to say support, but certainly discourse about Gish in like various Facebook groups and stuff. And there were a couple that would get pretty down because it was people going about like how they couldn't do stuff. I think one thing that's problematic about Gish, at least to the point that it's got now, is that there are a lot of tasks where if you haven't got connections to ask people to borrow supplies, or if you don't have a bit of cash to at least pick up something cheap or secondhand, it can start to get ridiculously expensive and prohibitive in that way. And there were also a lot of tasks where you kind of needed to be physically able in order to complete them. Like if you're in a wheelchair, or you had maybe like a visual or like hearing impairment or something, it might be difficult. Though, speaking of borrowed things, one of the tasks was to make the Love Makes the World Turn Round, show us that, and it was meant to be a video. So we, because there was a lot of globe related tasks this year, where we got through about 3 inflatable globes for various tasks.
What do you mean got through?
Well, one had to have a carbon footprint on a globe. I have loads of charcoal from a trip to a willow farm in Somerset back in 2003. I don't do charcoals very often, and I've still got them. And so basically we powderized a load of, well, not a load, but like
at first we just tried
drawing on my foot. My foot was not receptive to being drawn on by charcoal, but the stuff just wouldn't come off.
I think your foot was too dry.
Yeah, that's usually an issue with my skin.
Stupid foot.
Yeah, and then we put masks on and tried basically grinding some of it off.
What was it? The
emery board.
Yeah, the emery board.
Some of the charcoal or your foot?
The charcoal. And then basically we sort of powdered that, and then did we add a little bit more, or did we just use the powder?
I think we mostly used the powder.
Yeah, so cover my foot with the powder. That worked. Put my foot on the, made an imprint on the globe using that.
Which was like an inflatable globe that we, you know, got cheap.
And then put some fixative on it, and then took a photo for that. The other globe got turned, so we'll get back to the love one in a minute. The other globe was, third globe was used for a game of Hot Planet, in which Donald Trump was unable to casually play the game.
Obviously, you know,
it was a friend who agreed to dress up as Donald Trump.
Briefly.
That
must have been a very good friend.
Yes, with a very badly done wig and mask. Everyone,
just like the real thing.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like the game Hot Potato. It's that, but it's with the world. And obviously a whole, you know, take on climate change. And basically we've got everyone in a park. Everyone else looked summery, had oven mitts, playing Hot Potato, but with a globe that's been spray painted red. You can still slightly see the planet, like the countries and stuff on it. And basically passing around like Hot Potato. And then when the music stopped, Trump lost, basically. Paul did some excellent editing with that, putting on some very Mexican themed kind of tunes in the background of that video that the game of Hot Potato was being played to, or Hot Planet. So yeah, that happened. But the third globe was like Love Makes the World Go Round, show that. So I wasn't sure how to do this. It had to be like a machine that kind of did it, but obviously a machine's just something with moving parts. So I went round to my parents. Paul helped my brother Josh with another task, which involved building a statue of Misha Collins out of plastic.
Out of recycling.
Well, out of recycling, basically, like plastic recycling. That had intriguing results. It was a statue to help with the founding of our new what was the word that they used? Basically, we've decided to lay claim to the Pacific garbage dump, wasn't it? Like the big mass of plastic or whatever that's out in the Pacific.
Ah, right, okay.
And that's what the statue is for. But so Love Makes the World Go Round. So whilst Paul and Josh were working on that, apparently the glue gun Paul bought to deal with tasks during Gish Week was absolutely crap. I feel like he's going to offer a detailed review on that someday. Just like, don't buy this glue gun. It's terrible. my dad dug out his 50-plus-year-old Meccano set, right? And helped and basically assembled together a mechanism for me to crank a... we'd found a second-hand in a charity shop. I think it was the Children's Hospice Southwest charity shop in Truro.
I think so, yeah.
So that's a gift. Like, when we're buying second-hand, like, we tried to go to, like, charity shops and stuff. Because obviously the money that you're using to buy something to help complete the task is at least doing some good. Dad put everything together so that basically we could crank the Meccano to turn love to make the world spin whilst it was turning. And it was really, really cool.
Okay, so we've obviously been doing Gish for a number of years now as regular team members. How has being team captain been different from your previous experience?
Obviously you have a bit more control over what's going on, but also the added responsibility of trying to remain positive for everyone. And basically being encouraging. Like, obviously your teammates should be encouraging, but the captain needs to be extra encouraging to show people that they may think something they've done isn't fantastic, but actually it is. And the fact that they were able to do it is also quite astounding considering the complexity of some of the tasks involved. Like, was it Saris with Saris cross-stitch? Now, Retroid, you know Galaxy Quest, right?
Yes, I do.
You know the bad guy from Galaxy Quest?
Vaguely. It has been a few years since I've watched it.
Him?
Mm-hmm.
With a mathematical theorem that has a similar name to him.
Okay.
Done as cross-stitch. The only way you were able to come to the conclusion about this was through solving a very complex word number search, which three of our team members only managed to crack at God knows what o'clock on, what was it, Friday night? Which then led to me buying a load of cross-stitch supplies.
No, that was Saturday night.
No, Friday night, the puzzle was broken.
Oh,
Saturday
yeah,
morning,
true.
We bought the cross-stitch supplies and gave it to them to then try and make the
cross stitch
happen. So yeah, that was a thing that happened.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, some things require a lot of effort. Other things require quite little effort.
And also helping people to puzzle through things. So like my brother Josh, there were some things where he was like, I don't understand how I could do this. And I could see it and I'd be like, well, that's quite doable. And so there was one where you had to make a sculpture of a not at all romanticized bug out of either, what was it, marble, bread, or what was, there was a third substance.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
But we chose bread because obviously Josh isn't about to start carving marble. Bought him a massive, like, unsliced...
I do ask why not.
bought him a massive slice of... a massive loaf of unsliced bread. You know, fresh baked stuff. We then left that to go stale. And then I gave him an idea on, like, how he could, like, you know, look at a picture of a spider and then carve up the bread into the various anatomical points of a spider and join them all up.
Okay.
And it actually ended up looking really good. There were some people on Gish who like baked spiders. Like they got dough.
In the shapes of spiders, obviously.
Got dough and put them into the shape of a spider and baked it. But I think doing the bread carving approach actually went better because you ended up with like a more defined shape.
You know, this does sound like the, you know, the first 10 minutes of a film about nightmarish invasion of spiders. You know, and then someone gets out a Ouija board and it all goes wrong.
So, I mean, obviously all this is, you know, various tasks, both creative and just kind of generally weird.
But there's also some charitable stuff as well.
Exactly, and I think that's the core of it. It's the fact that this is all meant to go to help certain, like, you know, charities and, to help people in general.
For the last, certainly, I think, four hunts, there's been like a change of life cause. So the hunt has worked with Misha Collins' non-profit organisation Random Acts to identify a cause somewhere in the world, you know, that could do with funding, and then using one of the tasks during Gish to help fund money for that cause. In previous years, we've helped Syrian refugees. Another year we helped a ballet school that was helping out orphans in a particular African country. This year, the fundraising goal was set at raising $150,000 to help clear landmines in Laos, which is a place that still has ordnance and landmines from the Vietnam War kicking about,
blowing bits
off of people. And also supplying prosthetic limbs to children who've been victims of ordnance and landmines, basically. And the event hit the goal with the help of friends and family and all sorts of people donating to various teams. Because basically it was set up on Crowdriser, so there was like a big-ass campaign. And then each team could set up like their own little mini campaign page that fed into that. And so in order for the item to qualify for Part of the Hunt as you as a team, you had to have 10 different people donate to the cause from your page. And our team, for instance, managed to raise something like $113, which was in like a day and a half.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah. A lot of other teams did some of the things. Some of the hard-hitting teams, you know, the teams that are aiming for... Because you could get lots of extra points if you managed to rate... You were in, like, the top 10% of teams that had, you know, had managed to raise donations and stuff. So it was... That was really good. And there were a couple of tests. Like, there was stuff around doing nice things for people in old people's homes. Mm-hmm. There was, I think, at least one task. There was a couple of, like, pass-it-on kind of tasks for members of the public where you could, like, put some, like, change and stuff in, like, a laundromat or laundrette for people so that they could do their washing in that. Obviously, with the Padalecki task, like, okay, I made a sculpture using pads of Jared Padalecki, but I went and donated a whole load of sanitary pads to a, like, women's refuge group, basically, you know. Like, there are, you know, there were acts of kindness and charity in amongst some really, really quite insane tasks, but in the best possible way.
And it's kind of interesting because you obviously have you know, teams out there that, you know, are doing it because it's kind of nice, fun, weird type things to do and, you know, kind of just having a good time in essence. And then there are people that are really, really focused on winning that fucking holiday.
Yeah.
And getting them to do stuff like that is probably a very, very good idea because motivated people will obviously kind of get more for charity in essence.
I mean, there is another thing where you can get kind of like some credit for doing tasks really well with Gish. And there's a coffee, because there's a coffee table book of like some of the favorited or best entries of the year produced each hunt. And last year on the team that we were previously on, we did manage to make it into that book. And obviously there's kind of like, so for fun teams, there's always the hope that maybe like one of your items is cool enough that people actually like it and vote on it. Cause there's a, like there's, while items get vote, get administered and given points to by the Gish gnomes, as they're called, in the weeks after the hunt, there's also then a separate round of judging that happens as part of Harsh, which is stands for something ridiculous, but basically it's like a Gisher crowdsourced voting
system for the best item
or most creatively done items and stuff basically from the hunt, and they get pulled together to then be put into the coffee table book and also like an online hall of fame.
And that's kind of what we kind of aim to do, really. It's basically to get at least one item into that coffee table book. Because that would just be, you know, brilliant, us being, like, immortalised, as it were.
So that.
It also encourages people not just to do, you know, one task after the other, but to do it as well and creatively
as they can.
As they can.
Though at the same time, I saw with these Facebook groups, which I'm still not sure about, I saw a couple where you had people, certainly on a captain's one, kind of bitching a bit about the quality of submissions, even on a for fun team.
Mm.
And it's like,
it's for fun, for fun's sake.
Yeah, like, and the thing is, there was a lot of captains of that, like, I didn't actually do that much admin for the hunt. I think the advantage I had was that we had people locally. Like, we could turn up on our team members' doorsteps if they decided to be dicks. Not that I'm saying that ever came close to being an issue.
Well, no, I mean, we wouldn't anyway.
Yeah.
But seeing as your captain, you can choose who to airlock.
Yes.
That is how it works.
Yeah, pretty much. But then there were a lot of people just sort of like moaning about the administration and the quality of stuff their team was sending in. I do feel sorry for the teams where, because keep in mind, it costs money to sign up to Gish. You have to pay a registration fee. And it's over $20 for like the lowest level. If you're unfortunate and don't have the money for that, you can wait to see if someone sets aside a Gish scholarship for you. So somebody else essentially funds it. But it costs money to do this thing in terms of actually signing up. And then there were like loads of teams where they had people who ghosted. And one thing I'd like to know is, like, who, A, are the ghosties people who paid or people who got scholarships? I mean, because it'd be interesting to know where that's happening. So you've got basically people who just didn't do anything after they ended up on a team. Or they suddenly did something last minute that somebody had already got assigned to do or something, and various other unpleasantness. But that negative side isn't the majority of Gish.
No.
It's just quite vocal online.
Yeah.
When it goes wrong like that.
As things tend to be like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it is an intense week because you are literally, if you're not kind of actively, you know, working on the tasks, you're thinking about the tasks, or you're trying to organise the tasks.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the tasks.
And some people are doing it around work as well. With a couple absolutely. Of members.
So it can be a very, very intense week. And it's not, I've felt that it's not uncommon to basically have like, you know, your week starting out like excitement because of all these tasks, you know, looking at the ones that you can do, looking at the ones that you can't do. And then by like day two or three, you're kind of thinking to yourself, I haven't done enough tasks.
Yeah.
I'm just so exhausted. When's this going to be over? And then it's so like day kind of 3-4, you kind of get, you know, you wind again and whatnot, and you're just like, no, I want to really power on through this. And you know, there's even like last minute tasks that you do on the last day that you're just thinking, you know, the gish isn't over. Let's see what I can do. Oh, actually, I hadn't considered this one before, but yeah, we can do this one.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had that several times where, you know, basically the team's gone, okay, we've had our fun and whatnot. So, you know, kind of, see you next year or whenever.
Yeah.
And then we've gone, hold on a minute.
There's still something we could do.
Yeah, I can submit this item.
Yeah.
So wait, there's a thing.
Exactly, yeah. And that happens every year, as far as I can tell.
I want to point out, if anyone goes to my Twitter profile at the moment, the pinned post is it's a meme image pool created based off of a task image that we had that didn't have to be a meme. We just happened to take the photo like the meme, which was it's the boyfriend looking at something. Distracted boyfriend meme, but it was with me dressed up as the Hunt's mascot, which was Asbut, a donkey with butterfly like appendages. Yeah, exactly. but basically, it was like Paul memed that up. So if you want to see it, because that's basically what it was like with the last 12 hours of the Hunt.
Yeah, I mean, some of the tasks, like the Trump
hot potato, hot planet.
Yeah, hot planet one was kind of a last day kind of thing. It's before we, because what usually happens with us is because we have several people locally that are on our team, we usually use the last day of the Hunt to kind of do stuff in the morning and afternoon and whatnot, but then go for a meal out in the evening. And basically, this was done right before that meal.
Yeah.
So filmed, stuck it on my laptop, edited it, added sound effects and whatnot. Bang, out there on YouTube. Submit link. Done.
Yeah. And then there was like a couple of things where people were just like finding something to do in the evening afterwards and that.
Yeah.
But what was interesting though is for the start of the Hunt, for when the list dropped, because the list dropped, like, becomes public about 3 p.m. UK time every year. For that, we had a barbecue at a friend's house, or at their house.
Who was also on the team.
He was also on the team, and basically had everyone together for food and discussing items before we really got stuck in, basically.
Yeah, so, kind of dishing out who would be best for which item and whatnot, and, you know, kind of general chit-chat of how, you know, you could actually approach the items or...
Yeah.
You know, any resources that you have that could go towards somebody else doing their item.
But I think having an in-person team, other than for the location-specific tasks, does offer you, like, a lot more flexibility and trust and openness, because obviously everyone really does know each other and there's a higher degree of accountability. So, yeah, I want to move us on finally from this. I think because of time, because I need to go to bed at some point, guys. I've been up since 6:15.
Fair.
At some point. Like, I think everyone's got to pick one thing they've been up to. So what has everyone been up to? Retroid. One thing.
No bonus actions.
How about some very quick ones? In addition to the one thing. I managed to win an auction for an Atari STE about 2 weeks ago now.
Now, when you say auction, do you mean like eBay auction, or do you mean like a proper, you know, be there in person?
eBay,
okay.
Actually, no, I tell a lie. It was a buy it now, but I just managed to notice it at the exact right point because he didn't know what he was selling.
Oh.
It was someone who was selling several Atari STEs, several Atari STs. For those not in the know, well, you know, weren't around in the, you know, mid to late 80s, you had the two main 16-bit formats, which were the Commodore Amiga and the Atari ST. The ST was not as technically proficient until about 88, I think it was 88, 89, where they introduced a new model, which, long story short, wasn't that successful, wasn't that much software done for it. But it was the Atari ST Enhanced, hence STE. Mm. I've got it. I've had to take it apart to repair a semi-smashed floppy drive.
Ooh.
But I've got that bit working. It loads stuff, and now I'm waiting for a few bits and some glue, because basically it looks like it got dropped in transit.
Oh dear.
So yeah, I'm going to be repairing that and playing about with some real Atari ST hardware. But my attitude to it was always, I knew there was the Atari ST, but I knew there was the Atari STE, and my attitude was, if I'm going to plunk down cash for an Atari ST, I'm going to be getting the E, because then that means everything is covered, basically. Mm. And I've managed that. But yeah, that's kind of, I'm recording bits for that. I've also managed to snag a Dragon 32. I'll just wait for the, oh yes, the Dragon 32, Paul. Yes, we have to know about the Dragon 32.
Tumbleweed.
Yeah. It's a Welsh home computer from the early 80s.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, hence it being called Dragon. But it was pretty much a sort of a referenced, highly inspired clone of the Tandy home computer, the Tandy TRS-80 and colour computers of the early 80s in the States. And apparently there's overlap with the compatibility, but some addresses are different in RAM. But yeah, I've never seen one in the flesh. I've never used one. But the opportunity to buy one for 40 quid delivered came my way. So I plonked down on that. It arrived today, and I was going to unwrap it on the garden table so I could record it. But it was raining, so that didn't happen.
Fair.
Let's see, other things. Well, we have been watching, I will just glance over these. The final season of Orange is the New Black, which was very good. I thought it ended on a high note. Have either of you watched that?
We kind of got lost around season
4, I think.
4 or 5.
4.
Well, basically, in the latter seasons, what happens is, a character dies. I'm not going to say which one, because it was a fairly well regarded character. It was a well loved character. So but they die at the end of one season, and then there's a season where they have a riot, and there's a standoff with the prison guards. And then after that, when the riot ends, several of the characters are sent to max security.
Hmm.
And this is that's where this season takes up. I thought it managed to weave in ICE very well, because several of the characters who managed to get released were then picked up subsequently by ICE. If anyone doesn't know, ICE are the immigration enforcement for the US. And so they managed to do some fairly good reporting on exactly how shitty ICE are. So that was a good bad thing, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
And yeah, this has been the final season of Orange is the New Black, and it's one of the few that managed to survive until about, I think it was season 7. So.
Yeah.
Not all the characters, got out. Some, had bad endings. But generally, it was, whereas other seasons have ended and I've thought, it could have ended now because this is feeling a little bit tired. I was actually sad to see it go. Hmm. So, that's a positive for it. Let's see, we had the season finale of iZombie, which is just pleasing sort of brain candy.
Hmm.
It's there. It's not a brilliant series. It's not a bad series, but enjoyed watching it. And it's worth catching up with the end of season 5. And the return for 6 episodes of She-Ra and the Princess of Power, which
How
is
do you spell
the
She-Ra again.
S-H-E.
It's basically she-ra.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was good. I am continuing to enjoy it, and it is a very good reboot. I am pleased with this. Because, I'm not sure about rewatching the original She-Ra series.
We tried in the last 18 months. When we were at Friend's House.
No, it's more than that.
In the last 2 years. More like two. It was one of the barbecues.
Anyway.
Dear, let's not.
Actually, was that She-Ra or was that He-Man?
No, it was She-Ra.
Okay. It's just that it looked really, really weird because He-Man's kind of like, you know, almost static and kind of weird movements, and then all of a sudden it'll be like smooth motion when like they're running or something, when they're obviously rotoscoped, you know, somebody doing it really.
Oh yeah. I mean, the whole thing with the animation studios and the, well, that's the thing I've mentioned before. We've watched Star Trek animated series, and that's got some of the same reference animations.
Hmm.
And a lot of the women look like She-Ra.
That's just weird.
Because, it, of course, they were the same reference things, and it was how cheaply, how quickly they were kicking them out. But, yeah, I am strongly in favour of these new cartoon reboots where they are aware that there are some of the fans who are going to be watching it. So they, you know, they make it into more of a family-level series rather than we're just being watched by kids on a Saturday morning, who cares?
Mm.
So, yeah, She-Ra is still good. We've got access to Amazon due to, you know, probably the way a lot of people do, which is a relative sign for Prime so they can get stuff delivered. And then they don't care about the video stuff, but we do.
It's fair. I mean, there are some good things on Prime.
Oh, there are. But the notable thing is, I'm quite happy subscribing to Netflix, but if I actually paid for money, my money myself for Amazon, I would be a little bit more annoyed at the general lack.
Yeah.
But yeah, we watched the latter half of the season of Into the Badlands, which I still recommend. If anyone can watch that, please do. And then we started watching Cloak and Dagger.
Oh yeah.
Which is a Marvel series.
Didn't we try watching that?
I think we got through the first episode.
It's very slow to start. Frankly, it's only round about episode 7 or something that it's actually started to pick up. And it's just, come on, this is far too slow. Because it's still, I'm watching a series called Cloak and Dagger, and the dagger part has come into play, but the cloak bit is still, how do I work this? And it's just, well, surely you should know this is the name of the bloody series. I'm all in favour of long-form storytelling, but, you know, come on, have more of an idea. And it also suffers a bit from the characters being a bit daft. Come on, you can work this out.
Mm.
If suddenly you can transport yourself from one location to another, start working out what the common thing is. Because otherwise you're just going a bit mad.
Mm.
And we're about 3/4 of the way through The Boys, which is rather good, and I have not read any of the comics.
I think I read some of the comics, if not all of them, many, many, many years ago.
Yeah, I am completely unfamiliar with it, other than knowing what Garth Ennis is like as a writer.
We have finished watching it, and quite enjoyed it.
Mm.
There's some stuff though that it's a bit questionable. Like, did you have to cut? Because obviously, like, there's obviously a degree of fridging going on.
Yeah.
In multiple locations, and it's just like, pretty much.
Well, I'm not sure we've got to that point, but I liked the solution to the Invisible Man. Just put it that way.
Yes.
It's the kind of thing that I would think of because it's, well, if his skin's impenetrable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just leaving it at that.
Yeah. So, is Paul, one thing.
One thing.
Just like my one thing.
Yeah.
I have been designing a D&D campaign. It's going to be... Well, because I've never actually been Dungeon Master before. And it's kind of a challenge for me, really, coming up with both the story and making sure that the mechanics are, you know, all sorted in my head and whatnot. So I've been rather creative, really.
All I've seen is furious typing and then drawing and then more furious typing and then drawing and then more furious typing. Yeah. And then some YouTube videos and then more furious typing.
I mean, I've made the main campaign now and basically kind of made sure that everything links up with each other. So, you know, you go, you know, you do the A to B to C to C to E rather than being like A to B to C and then you have to kind of wait until, you know, the characters, you know, kind of figure out that they're meant to go to D type thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've made sure that, you know, everything will flow. I've started doing some of the stats for the characters in there. I will be doing some other extra bits here and there. I kind of want to make sure that the campaign's done before I really kind of get other people to play it, because chances are, you know, that there may be a case where, you know, if I didn't finish, you know, designing the campaign completely, then I'd kind of get people to play it, and then I'll kind of get to a point where it's like, okay, now I have to have this, you know, massive amount of work for the next session, and I. It's just, it's better if I have, like, the campaign fully fleshed out first and then get people to
do it. With one of Sheem's options of how things can play out.
Oh, yeah. I'm designing that into it. So, you know, it won't be literally a case of, well, no, you can't kill that character because he's instrumental later. It's going to be a case of, no, you can kill that character and it will affect the story.
Devious.
And what about you, Emily?
I'm going to go for something really random that I've been up to. Last night, I watched the first two episodes of the Chinese web series Guardian, which is based off a boy love novel of the same name. However, in the web series version, all the very overt homoerotica is now subtext. And the relationship between the two main characters is platonic because you can't show LGBTQIA stuff on Chinese media that involves moving images. It's about, like, I've yet to determine whether or not it's set on Earth. I feel like they've come up with a fictional name for the planet so that I'm watching this with subtitles, and these aren't like the best of subtitles. They're reasonably okay, but they're not like, it's like fan sub kind of level. I kind of, after watching the first episodes, I'm like, I wish I could rewrite the subtitles, because I know what they were trying to say in a couple of places and I know the right wording or terms they want to use. Anyway, so it's set on this planet, which is a lot like Earth. And there's these two alien races and humans and a special investigations unit. And it's set in something that's like the modern day. And one of these races is doing some crazy stuff and killing people and looking for these weird holy artifacts and stuff. And there's a lot going on. But really, we're mostly concerned with you've got the chief investigator dude who's called... So it's Zhao Yuling or something like that. So his surname, Zhao. And then you've got Professor Shin, or Shin Wei. His first name's Wei, his surname's Shin. And that's where the original chemistry is from the novel, apparently. Certainly you get undertones from it, certainly from the TV series, which somehow made it past the censors in China. I can't say that it is Dave Internet that's helping me watch it with a mix of YouTube. I can't imagine anyone over here picking it up at the moment to like from traditional media. How did I end up watching this? Because it's a really random thing for me to watching. A particular online community I'm a member of has been harking on about it for most of this year because it came out last year. It started in 2018. And there's just there's a lot of interest. It's like 40-minute long episode. Proper kind of, like there's cheesier stuff on the Sci-Fi Channel, I would say. Like it's still quite cheesy in its own way, but it's like a capable level of cheese. Manageable cheese. And on that note,
cheese.
Sounds that are maybe it's the sound of cheese. I think that's all we've got time for this episode. So it's a good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes to this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can listen to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, and a couple other places. That's all we've got. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at Nerds Podcast, and on Facebook it's Nerds Assemble Podcast. That's it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Damn it, Misha! Sorry, that's a bit loud.
That was a bit loud.
Damn it, Paul!
What?